A really warm welcome to everyone to this session we have here together, and I hope it's going to be an enjoyable time for us together. And you know, it's actually been a little while since I've stepped into the online Dharma Hall. Not quite sure what happened there with scheduling and things like that, but it's really nice to be here again, to see you here, and you know, see those of us I can't physically see, but maybe that's kind of the first thing to say, is be here in whichever way feels most comfortable for you. You know, you can have your video on, video off, however that goes, however that unfolds for you. Yeah, so if you like, we can begin and we can use the chat a little bit if you want to say, you know, how you are, where you are, you know, how life's unfolding for you in any way, if that feels helpful as a thing to share. Can be just a nice aspect that we can utilize, you know, as if we were kind of coming into a space together. There could likely be a little bit of, you know, casual conversation as we come into the space. And in this, you know, can be quite mysterious. You know, you have, there's a sense of a person there, but really no idea where they are, you know, really no real sense of how they're feeling, maybe. So yeah, if anyone wishes to, you can just drop it into the chat. Maybe it's the easiest way for us. And just say hello if you like, or you know, how the weather is, or anything you like. And I can just let you know for myself, I'm in Dorset, and I'm actually not that far from the sea, and it was quite a beautiful day here, so I had a little plunge into the English Channel, the French Channel, and yeah, a little swim just before coming in here, which might have enough seawater in my ears to cause my microphone not to work properly or something, but not sure what that was. But yeah, really nice to step in here and feel that sense of slowing down, tuning in. Yeah, it's really lovely to see the messages flowing through. So I'm really open to seeing, hearing, whatever, you know, it's kind of alive for you, what you're interested in exploring, where your kind of intentions, so to say, are in relationship to your practice and in relationship to what's going on. So I just, you know, I find the most kind of convenient way of kind of asking a really broad question of like, what's interesting to you now, or what are you practicing with these days, is just to kind of tune in into this session itself and kind of just ask, just to inquire, you know, what right now would be the kind of thing I'd like to support or I'd like to cultivate, or I feel would be, you know, kind of a beautiful offering that I could bring into being through this time. And there's no pressure, you know, we don't have to succeed, and there's, of course, no right and wrong answers. And furthermore, you know, you can just keep it to yourself, you know, what your intention is, what your aspiration is, or what your wish is there. But if you would like to, there can be something quite lovely about sharing those, and in a sense, almost kind of gathering them together, offering them together. So yeah, it's, as has already happened, feel free to pop it in the chat if it comes together as a word, a phrase, however it comes, whatever comes. And maybe as we read them, maybe we can allow ourselves to kind of tune into that quality. Whether we immediately relate to it or not, you know, there's probably some part of us that could imbue that as a kind of a broader sense of what we're doing with meditation. I think it has some interesting combination with the quality of bringing things into being. You know, something magical about that at times, and sometimes just naming those intentions or reading another's intentions can kind of bring those qualities alive. So just let us tune into those. When we hear calming the mind, that sense of it, what does it need? That out breath, that releasing of the tension around the eyes. The quality to love more. What needs to open in the sense of the heart. It's actually going to kind of come back to this phrase, you know, that's just been offered there from one of us, that actually part of what I'm interested in exploring here, when we say love more, is that more beings? Is that love one particular thing more than we did before? You know, so maybe we'll wheel back to that later on. Acceptance. I just really love to read, you know, your intentions here. It's so rich. And I could really just settle in and just read those and then kind of like fine dark chocolate, you know, just let it melt on the tongue, let it infuse the being. And just picking ones out at random here, it's a kindness in the middle of a lot of confusion. Kindness in the midst of life. Kind of feel the swirling, the whirling of existence, and somehow there's something in the midst of that that, yeah, is taking its place. Some incredible gentle strength to be kind. So let's have a practice together. Let's take half an hour together to have some practice. And this session, we're going to kind of move around the territory of, you know, those kind of qualities that we all kind of bring to the practice. These qualities of metta, of kindness, of wishing well, of, you know, giving our best. Giving it to all beings, that sense of more, giving more to more, giving more of ourselves, giving more of what we see as beautiful, as precious, as wholesome, is a way of supporting the Dharma, supporting our practice. So I'm going to drop in a few reminders every so often. And those who want, you know, we can kind of follow along. We can do sending metta, sending kindness to particular beings. But even if you don't want to do that practice, and I'm not saying you should with what I'm guiding, but just checking that quality of kindness, yeah, is there. So if you're just paying attention to, let's say, like the phenomena of the breath, Really like a sense of welcoming the breath in, you know, welcoming the body to receive the breath. So maybe getting into a posture that feels supportive for that kind of practice. And you know, many of us just go to sitting and say, oh, well, you know, meditation is sitting, but I think we should be a little bit more awake to actually, what is the kindest way of placing this body for this period of time, according to the body energy you feel right now, according to the state of the heart and the mind that you sense? It could be standing, could be reclining, could be anything. As we begin this practice, having a moment of what the Tibetans call gom, to become familiar with body, the energy of the body, the heart, mind, is it pulling away into future, or is it maybe scuttling away into past, not wanting to be here? Some way we can ease, bring interest into this moment of connection with the present experience of our life, here and now. Let's take a few minutes to begin with just gentle attention to the breath flowing, maybe the sensations of this posture, the sounds coming and going, whatever feels like the right quality. Just bringing that gentleness, that kindness, as we pay attention in this way. Staying steady in one sense door with one relatively subtle object at a time is not exactly the easiest thing for the mind and the heart to do. The body gets tight, the mind gets squeezed, tension drifts away. That's not a problem. When we notice that's happened, there's no sense of blame, no sense of shame, no sense of failure. But actually, when we notice, it's another opportunity to meet well, to meet with gentleness, meet this moment with sensitivity, maybe a kind of openness, interest. And think even if our practice were just relaxing the tensions that build up in distraction and being pulled apart, pulled away from presence, pulled away from our intentions, what we really wish to grow. Either with that flavor of kindness or any of the intentions that we heard or we ourselves offered as we meet this moment. What would this moment of kindness look like? Maybe it's just this, just to relax, just to pay attention. Give attention. So if you're enjoying this practice, if it's nourishing, if it's fulfilling for you, then really feel free to continue with this as the remainder of the practice. We still have about 20 minutes or so of practice together. But if you'd like to, you know, kind of relate to the session, invite us to cultivate qualities, the practice of metta. this time. Cultivation, the increasing of sense of goodwill for all beings, including ourselves. Probably the most supportive way of beginning this practice is to bring to heart and mind, bring to the attention, the imagination, the awareness, a being to whom you find it easy to wish well. Maybe it's also a being you feel is supportive to you. The key thing of being now, really meaning being here, doesn't need to be a human being, any being, and we're going to come on to more beings later anyway, but any being that you feel the goodwill, the love flows relatively easily. We just take a few moments just being with this being, the sense of this being, however clear, for some it's an image, for some it's a felt sense, for some an energy, a frequency, or it could be a combination of those and something else. Still breathing, still listening, still sensing. But also including the presence, the felt, imagined presence of another. Your own phrases that really express that goodwill. And if you wish, bring those in. I'll offer out some. I'll just say mine at once, and you can have the space to use your own. Phrases I like to use is, may you be well. May you feel safe. May you be happy. May you live with ease. And if you wish, you can use these phrases. A little tip I find really helpful is when we say the phrase, I like to really feel like I mean it. What do I mean to be well? Let's have a moment feeling what it feels like when you're well, as the energy courses through the body with vitality and brightness, how the mind clears. It's also bright. With that whole sense in the whole body as much as possible, in the whole being, breathe it, send it to them, may you be well. When I practice, I spend a minute or so just on that one, may you be well. Feel it, sending it. Feel it, the preciousness of it and the preciousness of giving it away. The delight of giving it away. Becoming lighter as we share what's most beautiful. now I would probably transition to may you feel safe. Thinking about that feeling of feeling at home in your own body, feeling safe from harm that we do when we're around friends or family. And feel the awareness of that feeling and then give it away. And you feel safe. Feel happy. Happy, such a broad term from the bubbly, joyous, excited, to the more calm, contented, peaceful, satisfied. So whatever you feel you wish to wish, feel into that, fill oneself with the sense of it, share it out. If you like, you can play with how you give. Just give gently, like a drop of ink spreading in water, rippling, spreading out, or whether you really flow it out like an unblocked stream just gushing through, kind of wild offering, whatever feels right. Live with ease. That equipoise, fluidity, flexibility with the ups and downs. Not reactive, still responsive, still alive. May you live with ease. Switch to another being and invite you to remember, to recall any time recently where a non-human being kind of caught your attention, held your attention for a moment or two. It might have been the robin singing nearby. Maybe you caught sight of a bat at dusk. A squirrel. It might be near in time or from a while ago. Bringing that being to mind. Sharing that wish for their being well, well looked after, well nourished. And feeling it in yourself, if that's helpful, radiating out. Wish for safety and for having all they need. Contentment, satisfied. To be at ease. This next step of the meditation, just beginning to have a sense that this one expression of this species, but one, there must be others, maybe in a family. Maybe in a community. And as we add more beings, What's happening to that feeling? Can we feel all of them and all of them deserving of our kindness and care? Whether it's realistic or not, may you all be well and safe. Satisfied. At ease. They're not just in this location where you've seen them, their communities are in many, many locations, and allowing that spatial dimension to extend. If not exactly the same, but similar beings will be in other countries. Some at high altitudes, some at low. Near to water and far from water. In an easy environment or a challenging one, may you all be well and safe. May you be satisfied, at ease. And opening wider and wider to include all, if it was a robin, all the birds. All the rodents, all the mammals, all the fish, all the humans, all the expressions of life on this planet, right now opening our well-wishing, and again we can open, spread slowly like that ink blot spreading into the water, or really wildly, freely throwing open the doors of the heart. May all living beings be well. May all living beings be safe. May all living beings be free. Free in every possible way. Here and now be free. May all the beings yet to come be free. Be well looked after and safe from harm. Thank you everyone for your practice. It's been a real it's been a pleasure for me practicing alongside you, and yeah, hope I didn't get in the way of anything unfolding for you in the most beneficial way. But I hope you know you can always mute me. I'm only a button away. Silence is only a button away. So, yeah, it's interesting. I don't quite know where you kind of went to in that meditation, what your fellow living being was, and kind of what dimensions it takes you to. It's, I don't know. I feel particularly with metta meditation, I think it's kind of opens itself out for a lot of exploration and creativity. Perhaps all of our practice does that. Something I really kind of like caught my attention when I first heard about it is that, you know, you won't find anywhere in the Pali Suttas, you know, how did the Buddha really do metta meditation? And so, you know, these kind of variations that people come up with, you know, you do the, you know, easy relationship, and then you do the neutral relationship, and you know, it's like, have I got a neutral relationship? It's like, you know, it's opening up all these kind of questions, and then you kind of like, then you move on to something challenging, and you do yourself, and you do this and this and this. And that kind of came along later, and of course, it might have well have been exactly what the Buddha was doing, but it also might not have been, you know, and there might be other variations. And being someone who kind of at a certain point in my kind of musical adventures really found improvisational art, you know, and jazz and things like this, and kind of taking the standard tunes and kind of playing them upside down and inside out and trying to discover what other things are in here waiting to come out. Yeah, so I really kind of feel like, oh, metta meditation, it's a standard. You know, there's a standard, and then from there, play with it. Try and find the way that it really speaks to you, sings for you, comes alive for you. And so, yeah, I just, I think it's got endless possibilities, you know, and I find it very, very fruitful. And I would kind of say, but not in a very heavy way, but I feel like it's a really important practice. And something about it feels like it's important for our times to develop this. Maybe I'll step back from that. I feel it's really important for me to develop this quality, you know, and to be the kind of person I aspire to be in the world these days. Yeah. And something that's kind of come to my attention is this idea of, you know, you'll often hear, you know, at the end we should send metta to all beings, and this part really is in the teachings. You know, it's often talked about in terms of kind of cardinal directions: north, east, south, west, you know, and you cultivate a heart that radiates in all directions. You know, and like, just to make sure, have you sent your metta to the north recently, you know, or to the southeast? And if we think about that geographically, it sounds a bit like a joke. But if we want to include all beings, it's sometimes worth contemplating, you know, who is it to the south of me, and how far to the south do I go? Yeah, you want to go so far to the south that you come up hitting yourself from the north again. It's like, you know, that's how far south, right? What a fortunate thing to live on a circle, a globe. A sphere. We just keep sending it out. If you just change the direction just 1 degree each time, you know, you're eventually going to cover everything, like wrapping a piece of string around itself. Yeah. So, but, you know, there's a really great deal that we can see there, and I think that on and off the cushion, we can actually see our engagement with the world actually mirroring this practice. And I had a magazine delivered to me the other day, and it came with a, sorry for the scratchy noises, it came with a printout from these people, the Médecins Sans Frontières, who I donate to every once in a while. Doctors Without Borders, sometimes called, you know. Really, really fantastic organization. And I don't know if anyone's kind of come across this little pamphlet thing. I mean, I guess in a sense they're advertising themselves and to get more donations. But actually reading their work is a meta-meditation, you know, in so many ways, in so many parallels. You know, so I read about their work, which is amazing bodhisattva-level compassion, you know. There's kind of like various schools kind of come together in this area, you know. It's like really thinking about people who've developed, trained in something that takes years and years, you know, to get to that level where you're a trained nurse, you're a trained doctor, you're medical staff, and then they go to the most challenging places on our planet, you know, whether those of conflict or those of famine and, you know, or, you know, persecution and neglect, and just dedicate months and years, regular, you know, holiday time that they give to this, so that, you know, people who are really in the most terrible of circumstances have someone with them. And it's just beautiful. I'd really recommend a visit to their website. And partly, I would like to say, if you're going to give dana for this session, please do support Gaia House as you always would. But you know, if you feel like giving some dana to something really worthwhile, then yeah, these guys are guys, girls, women, men, everyone who goes there are really worthwhile. So yeah, if you'd like to give dana for this session, then please give it to msf.org/donate. And also give yourself the gift of a visit to their website and feel inspired. You know, I think it's so, so important that we understand that there are wise and wonderful beings on this planet who are using their lives really well. Yeah. And I know that you're interested in that, because when I said to you, what are your intentions? They all came back as very beautiful and aspirational inclusions. Yeah. So because it's such a good meditation, I'd like to just recommend a particular article from them, one here written by Erin Lever, who is a midwife, and she's reporting back from South Sudan. And just as has happened recently in Pakistan, you know, there were catastrophic floods in South Sudan. So, you know, that might kind of flip upside down our impression of like what life's like there. And in the middle of the night, she's reporting that she received a call that a woman in the final weeks of her pregnancy had arrived with significant bleeding, which of course is a medical emergency. Both the life of the child and the mother are, you know, really at risk. And so they head down to their medical center to, you know, welcome the arrival as they come. And of course they're coming through floods, and you know, when you have severe bleeding, and you know, you're not walking through floods. So the family of the village are carrying this woman, you know, through this flood water on a blanket. It's just, you know, it's these stories, they're so full of expressions of this kindness and care for fellow beings. You know, I'm sure it's not only the family members that were involved and engaged in this. And, you know, where the waters got too high, they had to take it in turn, you know, carrying the woman one at a time, the people, this really remarkable endeavor. So the woman arrives, she's in pretty critical condition, they say, and slightly anemic from the blood loss, but otherwise stable, although still bleeding, and her baby, thankfully, is still alive. And, you know, so they do a, you know, emergency birth, and you know, at the end of it, you know, the baby actually comes out not breathing, and they do the CPR and they manage to get the baby breathing, and it's like, this is such an up down story. You should read the whole thing. She's written it very beautifully as well. But they're really aware that this woman has hemorrhaged seriously and she's lost a lot of blood. And this is going to be the final bit I'm going to tell you about, but it's like really amazing. And she calls this next chapter Stepping Up. So the woman, she started to lose consciousness. It's the middle of the night. We don't have enough staff to deal with two emergencies simultaneously. Yeah, so the baby needs looking after and the woman. However, members of our nearby neonatal... Sorry, I'm such a softie, I can't read these sentences without choking up. However, I should have just sent you the link, read it yourself. However, members of our nearby neonatal nursing team step in to help. She writes, we can always get one unit of emergency blood from our bank. After that, the patient's well-being often relies on donations from family members. The woman's relatives step up without hesitation. Many of the men, I find it really hard to read this, but I've already cried about it twice. Anyway, here we go. Many of the men who carried this patient here are very young adults. Their thin bodies show the consequences of the harshest living conditions. It is touching to see them having achieved an immense physical feat to arrive here. Now, lining up to donate a pint of blood to help us to save their relative. By early in the morning, the woman has received 3 units of blood and it's clear she will be okay. So, well, I think it's just really, really, really beautiful to kind of contemplate that these things are happening, you know, right now. Someone's doing this, you know, just as, you know, right now someone is sending us metta. You know, this is the kind of ongoing reality of our times. You know, there's so much to kind of say about this. But I think that something that's important for us as human beings to know in a world where we're more and more conscious of what's happening in the world, that sometimes we get shaped by our perception of what it's like over there, you know, and maybe it's all terrible and, you know, all child soldiers and all this and that. But there's this quote I heard actually repeated by Sanjeev Bhaskar, the comedian. Many of you may know him, British comedian from Punjabi heritage. He said, he was repeating, I think this Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, I think it's an American thing, those who know will know. Apparently his mother had said to him, whenever you see a disaster on the television, or you come in contact with the catastrophe, keep your eyes peeled for the helpers. You know, there will always be helpers, you know, in that circumstance. There will always be bodhisattvas where they're suffering. Yeah, there'll always be people practicing compassion where they're suffering. And that's not, you know, kind of like a laissez-faire thing, but also I think it's really important to tune into that when we come into contact with this kind of territory, it's important to kind of question and to understand what is here, you know. It's never one thing. And also, there's always an opportunity to help. There's always this opportunity to be, you know, part of that side, you know, to be noticed. stepping in, moving forwards. And of course, you know, the circumstance doesn't need to be as dramatic as it is in that story. But it might be, you know, at times. And also, I think it's also important to remember to recognize that, you know, sometimes we think, oh, well, if I do something, it's not so fantastic. Yeah, it's just mediocre. But I think that all of us want to see a world that's more equitable, more fair, more beautiful, more supportive for all beings. And we should work together to help create that. And that's certainly a big part of our path, to allow ourselves to be touched, to allow ourselves to dedicate our time, our energy, and when we can, of course, also our finances. You know, this is an unequitably distributed world when it comes to resources, you know, which in some ways is a great thing. Everyone has a little bit of something, but now we've been around long enough to see that actually that's added up to inequality, and the trickle down isn't trickling on its own. So we should, you know, use our practice, you know, not for the unwise acceptance, which is to say, oh, well, this is just the way it is. Yeah, but for that wise acceptance that actually says, okay, this is the way it is. Why is it that way? What can we do to make it different? What can we cultivate? And so I just want to spend maybe, I hope, not more than 5-10 minutes just talking a little bit about that sensibility of all beings. That sensibility of all beings. What does that mean for us? Yeah. When we think of all beings, is there someone we're not including? You know, purposefully overlooking, accidentally overlooking. And so if you do something like a metta practice, on the cushion, off the cushion, you can just kind of practice with that to say, you know, who's in? Or who isn't in here? You know, and so you might have a kind of a way of working your way around communities. Check, have I included people from that country? Or yeah, have I included beings that have these different natures? Yeah. Am I also saying, you know, may all beings be well, and actually causing harm to particular beings through the way I live my life? Yeah, this is also an ethical question, of course. Understanding that we share this planet with countless beings is in some ways unignorable. Yeah. But I think of it a little bit like mindfulness. Yeah. How difficult is it to be mindful? To be mindful right now, to know that you're alive, to know that you're breathing, to know that you have a body, a heart, a mind, to know that this is a conscious moment, there are appearances happening. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, being mindful, got it, yes, now I'm mindful. And then in a moment's time, we will forget and we'll be like, oh, I'm all entangled up in my story and, you know, believing my stuff and, you know, taking everything at, you know. So it's so easy to apply mindfulness. If someone says to you, be mindful, you say, oh yeah, it's kind of effortless to inhabit that present moment. Here I am. Alive, I can feel my feet on the floor, or I can feel my buttocks on the chair, I can feel the inhalation, the coolness, I can feel the exhalation, the warmth. Anything I bring my attention to, if I have the sensitivity, I'll have the sensibility to sense it. And then I just slip it, it just slips out of my mind in the next moment. And I'm off in, you know, to-do list land or regret land or wherever else it is, you know, I'm kind of pulled towards. Because we have these great, wonderful, brilliant, magnificent intellects, yeah, that can do so much. And so they don't like to just sit there, they start revving up the engine and off we go into usefulness mode or whatever it is. And I think the same thing is, we know that we are global citizens. But how often do we think about that? And, you know, this isn't just kind of idle chit-chat. Like, if you actually think about it, when you buy something, the next thing you're going to buy, whatever food it is, or, you know, clothing, or anything for around the home, and you think, who made this? Who made this? Do I need this? Was this made in the way that I would like them to live? Just have a moment of sending metta to those beings, you know, whatever it is, to those beings that helped to fabricate this. Are they near or far? Where are they? Who are they? What was their lives? Have that moment of care, and I think it starts to change how we live, what we value. Yeah. And so, you know, this is kind of question in our meditation, adds to kind of cultivating this creation. So that's one whole kind of aspect, that's kind of ethical aspect. I think it opens out a lot of rich questions for me personally, in the way that I live my life. But then I want to kind of bring it back to a kind of a practice question actually, is like, how much should we spread our awareness, our sensibility? Because I think something happens for us much of the time in the meditations. It may or may not have happened to you today. So say, you know, if you took a seagull and you started spreading it out in this way, and we're getting more seagulls, it's like, oh yeah, that seagull's a lot like that seagull. It must be ones over Antarctic. And, you know, oh, getting seagulls everywhere. This enormous global flock of seagulls, which there must be right now, you know. How far is one seagull from the most distant other seagull? And he's like, connected in some way. Some actual big amorphous movement of gulls around this planet. You know, imagine you could just see that. What a sight to be able to behold. Same thing with whales, you know, or dolphins, or, you know, schools of fishes and all other creatures. And they also, you know, we want to take them into consideration in our practice, in our lives, that they exist. They want to have a free and beautiful existence, and we want to wish that for them. But there's this kind of question, is how much do we spread? How quickly do we spread? How slowly do we want to evolve? So if this becomes part of your practice, you know, it's just a practice point that I've noticed for myself, is that it might be enough to spread to my local area, right? Because that's as far as the kind of the consciousness and the attention, the energy goes for now. And it's like, after that, it's just words. It's lost that feeling. Yeah. And I think the feeling for me is quite important. Both as it's enjoyable to cultivate that, but also I feel like it matters that I feel it. Yeah. So I would rather maybe hold back from all beings to, you know, really feeling a sense of connection to more, already knowing that that's way more than I normally think about. Yeah, I normally think about only the center of the universe. That's me, by the way. It's my other name, you know. It's on my bio somewhere. The unknown center of the universe. Other people often think it's them, but I think I've, you know, clarified that quite impossible it could be somewhere else. But yeah, we raid it, extend that out, and then it shrinks back. So the question then in practice, how wide do we want to stretch? And when it comes back, how wide do you want to stretch it out again? How far can we keep that extended? Now the final area that I thought is quite interesting is there's this thinker, an author called Will McCaskill. He's a philosopher. He actually came up with this principle, which is also a group called Effective Altruism, which has its own kind of, it's kind of interesting in and of itself. I think you can see elements of effective altruism in the Médecins Sans Frontières people. You know, they're highly educated, highly trained, highly valuable in a certain sense. And they're giving their skills where it's most needed and most effective. But I think part of the idea behind effective altruism is earning money through even kind of a very well-paid work that doesn't necessarily have a direct ethical contribution to the world and taking that money and giving it where it's most needed, you know, buying mosquito nets in whatever, Africa or something, you know. So I think it's something that's kind of going on in the Bill Gates Foundation kind of concept of doing charitable work and, you know, where governments don't step. But why I'm mentioning him today is he made some interesting points about when we want to think about all beings, can we also think about future beings? And for me, that's kind of added a new dimension. He's added the fourth dimension to the metta practice. You know, we kind of dropped it in at the end of that metta practice. And I didn't want to kind of lay it on too heavy, so I didn't want to take up too much of your time. But it's like, also again here, building slowly. So it's not too difficult for us to think about future generations. Yeah, maybe in your own family or those around you, you can think one more generation's time in your town. Yeah, these beings are going to come. They're going to live there. They're going to work there. They're going to have their lives in the place that you can imagine. And if you can imagine that, well, they will also give another generation, yeah, if we keep surviving. And we should think in terms of keeping surviving still, yeah. Something's going to happen. And keep going with generations after generations after generations. We start to think, to feel, to sense in broader timescales. You know, it's quite difficult to do initially. You know, it's more difficult than mindfulness. Ah, present, yes, here, da-da, you know. It's more difficult than the spaciousness, the sense of, you know, the spatial dimension. There are beings over there. Yeah, oh, now I remember. But actually, future generations, how do you even imagine them? Let's say you've gone 50 generations into the future. Yeah. 50 times 20, 25 years. You know, we're really going far beyond what we can easily conceive. But if those beings are to come, they should also be somewhere in the heart that wishes well for all beings. In the Bodhisattva vow, this will be the last thing I say, you know, it says there, even though beings are endless, even though time is endless, even though the universe is a limitless expanse, a vow to save them all, to free them all. But not the future beings, obviously. I mean, that's just out of the question. But yeah, all beings. Maybe that's part of our awakening. Maybe it's part of the beauty of this challenge. Have a dear, blessed, delicate planet. It's still living, still breathing, still here. And may it serve many more beings to come. So I hope this sharing is supportive for your practice, whether that's metta, compassion, mudita, appreciative joy, equanimity, equipoise, and balancing aliveness, wishes ease to all things, or whatever else you practice. Yeah, and I'll pass the mic to you. Is there anything you would like to reflect, to share, to respond at this time? You're very welcome. Put any comments in the chat, or feel free to unmute if that's something you'd like to do. So at this point, a couple of participants were sharing how it reflected for them that, yeah, you know, I often think of myself as being at the center of my universe, and that shrinking down is painful, and it also feels a little bit shameful to actually contemplate it. But you know, I feel like there's a lot I need to do, a lot of work I need to do in my life, in my existence, and you know, also I have to own that as well. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And yeah, we've all got a really long way to go And at the same time, I think that we can take, there's a lot of slogans in the world, aren't there? But like, we can take some useful ones. For example, the kind of ecological slogan that says, think global, act local. Yeah. And you can actually think about that in a kind of an interbeing sense. Yeah. Like, think about the fact that your life is not only affecting you. Yeah. It's also affecting anyone else around you. Now, if that's true, let's say, like, even if you only have one step away from you. Yeah. Like, you affect only those, who actually come into physical contact with you. But if you affect them, then everyone they come into contact with is also affected. Because you affect them, they're affected. Then how they affect others, they will affect others. So even if there's only one step, which is ridiculous to even imagine, it might only be one step, then there are ripples going out there. Yeah. And so, as we were kind of saying in the metta meditation, maybe you're just going to imbue like an ink, like pour a bit of ink into water and it kind of spreads out in that kind of cloud in there, and it kind of keeps spreading, and you can't see it. Why can't you see it? Because it's spread everywhere. And pour more in, it's going to spread again. It keeps spreading, same kind of sense. You can have it that way, or it's going to be dramatic and it's like, I'm just throwing the doors of the church of my heart wide open, and it's for all beings, and I'm going to go out and do something really radical and kind of newsworthy and heart-wrenching, like the person in the story, who is only one person among, thousands of people who actually work in this organization doing this radical work. So there's that whole kind of dimension. So we are having an impact, but there's also this kind of quality, is there can be a positive kind of sting of our conscience being pricked. The Buddha spoke very beautifully of this. He had Hiriyana Tapa, these kind of qualities that he called the guardians of the mind, which that prick of our conscience of saying, am I actually doing enough with this precious existence? It's like, that's the kind of a positive piece of pain in our life, when we say, that actually didn't live up to the standards that I was looking for. I'm clear about what my intentions are, to be more kind or whatever, and I just look and I say, that wasn't very kind. this day, this Saturday that we have here, was I optimally kind or was I a little bit selfish? It can just be helpful to reflect on that. These hindrances will come up. I will be greedy. Okay, that's going to happen. But what am I going to do about it? That's the inquiry. We have to understand where happiness comes from in life. And we need these reminders. To understand the roots and the roots of happiness. The roots like tree roots, the roots like pathways that lead to happiness, to well-being. And we know it, and it's our deepest intentions to exhibit those qualities. Whatever it is that people wrote in the chat earlier, I want to learn to be with difficulty. I want to bring kindness in the midst of confusion. I want to develop peace. I want a steadiness of heart and mind. Why? Because we understand the roots like tree roots, the roots like pathways that lead to happiness. And all of these Dharma teachings have one taste, the taste of inviting freedom. And so we'll hear these things and we'll think, oh, I'm not doing enough. It's like, you're not doing enough. But like, hopefully that doesn't feel like what you're doing is stupid, ridiculous, a waste of time. You've developed something, you've made something better, you've made something stronger. And it will have rippled out if it was, heading in the right direction, which is the direction of freedom, of well-being, of happiness, of release. And if it wasn't, then okay, that wasn't helpful. That built more dukkha, built more friction, led to more consumerism or whatever else it is that we see as the roots and roots of dukkha. So, when we're invited to something, and let's say like it has some wisdom in it, like all beings, it's difficult to hold, it's difficult to sense, really wholesome, skillful actions, they're difficult to do, That's why they're a training. That's why they're part of a path. But all of them lead to the resolution, the untying. That's what resolution means, the untying of the knots of dukkha and distress. Our ways of deconstructing the fabrication of all that goes wrong in the world. Lean into the winds of the ennobling, righted ways that we have. And to also see the opportunity in those challenges. It's like, oh, that's a challenge. Must be an opportunity there. So anything else we should touch on? There's some beautiful comments in the chat also to read. Really appreciate all the kind words that have been said, and I'll certainly take my time to read through fully afterwards. But it's certainly, I think we live in challenging times, and of course I also think, from what I understand, this isn't the first time human beings have lived in challenging times, and I think I would much rather be alive in these challenging times than some of the ones that came in the past. And if anything, in the times when we might look back and say, oh, if only whatever, if only we were all smoking cigarettes without knowing they caused cancer, I'd be like, no, that doesn't sound better. if only we were all just burning fossil fuels, not knowing it was creating climate change. No, ignorance and bliss do not have much to do with each other. We live in challenging times, but part of the challenge is being more awake. This is this journey of awakening, and awakening the qualities that lead to awakening. That steadiness of attention, that embodiment of our wise intentions, that flexibility of views, ways of looking, ways of understanding, that capacity to bring into being really, really beautiful ways to relate to all beings, including ourselves. So thank you for your time together. It's been a real pleasure. And feel free to speak into the room as we spread out back into our locations.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.